Whenever you are ready.
No time like the present. Oh, coaster. There you go. I'll take one too, Amanda, while you're handing them out.
Not a problem.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone, to our next budget workshop. We're going to start with planning and sustainability. Andrew, what's up? Is that what's up first?
That is right, yes. We've got a number of bureaus today, and starting off with planning and sustainability. And is Katie going to be there?
Katie, I think so.
Okay. Actually, hold on. I was going to talk a little bit in general about some of the dashboards and performance stuff, but maybe we'll wait because there's been some good email back and forth from Katie on that, so maybe we'll wait until she gets here.
You want me to start? Do you want to start? Is that okay? Wasn't sure. Some of you have seen this before. This is actually our strategic plan that we finished last year, but I thought I would pass it around again because we don't really talk about everything that's going on in our budget in these brief discussions. We mostly tend to talk about the things that are on the edges, so just wanted to hand that out. So, Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I've been in this job now for about 6 years, and I have to say that this is the first time that I feel relatively good about our budget for the coming years. The hard news is that over the past 6 years, I've literally had to lay off more than a third of my staff. And so it's been a hard road, but I'm hopeful this year that if these packages are funded, that I actually won't have to have any layoffs. So we'll see how it goes, and that would be a tremendously nice change. So I'm going to probably in your packets, in your binders, you have slides that do a quick overview, the ones that I provided earlier. I'm going to talk about our funding resources, our budget from years past, and then move on through our decision packages. So in your binder is a pie chart that looks like this. And it just lays out where our revenue comes from. So half of our revenue comes from general fund dollars, about a third from solid waste fees, and then about 15% in this current year from grants and contracts, interagencies. In past years, we've had as much as 30 or 40% of our budget be from grants and contracts. We've had some major grants about 5 or 6 years ago. The beauty of those grants, in addition to being able to do the good work mostly related to sustainable development and energy efficiency and climate change, is that they also help to cover some of our rent, overhead, and those kinds of expenses. So we'll continue to seek outside grants and funding, especially with a new focus on foundation funding, as we think there's some opportunities there. The next slide, which is the bar chart on the next page, this just gives you a little bit of perspective. When Council created the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability 6 years ago, the City Council at that time had chosen for several years back in 2005, 6, 7, 8 to fund a lot of what planning did actually out of one-time general funds, so in very significant amounts. And so when the recession hit, it hit hard. And we scaled back from $3.9 million in one-time funding to $2.2 and eventually down to $500,000. During this period, we've been in serious cutback mode. I think very creative. We eliminated management positions, admin positions, and unfortunately, 25 planning positions. Throughout all these changes, I think we've stayed pretty nimble and maintained our commitment to high-quality work and to community involvement. If you look at the last bar in the bar chart for 2014-15, you can see that there's no longer any one-time general fund. You took sort of the bold step last year, which I think was a step in the right direction, and restored $550,000 in funding back to our base general fund budget. And that was specifically targeted so we could fully fund the district liaisons. While this was extremely helpful, we continue to have a deficit and need additional funds. We do believe that we need about $300,000 or $400,000 to sort of right size the budget so that we don't do this thing every year to come back with one-time funds. Seeing that we were at $3 million and now we're significantly less. So any questions on that, or I'll walk through our budget decision packages. Okay. So the three decision packages I have for you to consider are, the first one's a focus on new standards for single-family neighborhoods. The second is finishing up the Central City Plan, and the third is a pilot project to begin a new historic resources inventory. So for the first request, the focus on single-family neighborhoods will help us to move quickly to implement the comprehensive plan through important code changes in single-family neighborhoods. The proposed project will help us to refine development standards, things like, you know, how large of homes, height, mass, setbacks, key issues in single-family neighborhoods that will help to make infill more compatible with the scale of the neighborhoods. It's something that a lot of you have been talking about to me over the past couple of years. We also want to look at adding additional flexibility for innovation in the types of housing allowed. So we're pushing on this one at the mayor's request and have already asked for $150,000, or today, I think the spring bumps are due, to get this kind of jump start on this. So I want to highlight that in the budget submittal originally, we had asked for this to be one-time funded. However, since then, I've had discussions with our budget advisory committee, and they recommend that you consider having this be ongoing funds. And we recommend that because we know there is a list, and I can give you a long list of projects to help implement the comprehensive plan that we're about to finish. And we can come back year after year asking for $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, depending on the projects, or we could do it one time and just have that be our base budget. So that's sort of where we're at with that one. One of the problems with the one-time funding, and this has become very real in the past 2 years, is that I have 5 or 10 people that are on one-time funding in the planning group, not sustainability. There's others there who every year don't know if they're funded. And so when we had a poor job market, that wasn't quite as big of an issue. Right now, it's much more of an issue, and we have consulting firms in other cities and even our own city able to provide more stability. So I've lost 4 senior or mid-level planners in the past just 12 months because there's a stability problem, and they're just not sure whether or not they have a job, and in many cases would have rather stayed. So I just wanted to toss that out there as an opportunity or something to think about. So that's the first package. The second package is wrapping up the Central City Plan. It includes bringing the final plan to council, along with the zoning code amendments to implement the plan, a new development bonus system, and other specific code and design projects. This is a request for one-time money. Without the budget office also always asks, so what happens if you don't get this? And in this one, basically just moves the timeline out. So if we don't get the funding for this, it's probably another 9 months. In addition to the plan, we'd really like to get this done. The community would like to get this done. There's a lot of development that needs to move forward, and I'd like it to move forward with the new rules in place. And then the third decision package has been highly recommended by the Central City Advisory Committee, the Planning and Sustainability Committee, and others. The project is to fund a scalable approach for a new historic resources inventory. The inventory is a fundamental tool for understanding our historic resources and helping to prevent their demolition and loss. It's been a request by the historic preservation advocates throughout the city and Landmarks Commission literally for about a decade. Our historic resources inventory is woefully out of date. We are especially unprepared to address potential losses of historic resources located outside of the central city. So we don't have a good idea of what those are, where they are, and we want to try to do that. We also know that this process can be extremely expensive. So we searched for how dozens of other cities were doing the same kind of work, and we came upon an option that uses a mix of professionals but also volunteer labor from throughout the communities. And so we want to give this a try. It will have significant opportunities for the public to actually go out and help to do the historic resources inventory, and we plan to pilot the approach in East Portland. Then we would come back before the end of, so next spring, with a recommendation on how or if we should continue with doing the work and doing it in the methodology that we've come up with. So that's the three decision packages I can talk about. I'm not sure how these have been going about the key performance measures, about the mayor's priorities, and how those fold in, or we can have a conversation about the decision packages.
And actually, maybe if you talked a little bit about your KPMs, because not surprising, planning has some really good key performance measures, and
great.
So I think running through what those
and
are.
Make sure that I have the same. This is the, I think, the final one you gave. Okay.
Yeah, they have the dashboard, and then also your handout. Yeah.
So we have four. And they're all generally moving in the right direction so far. We've got more people now living in complete neighborhoods. We have more people moving to Portland instead of living in the suburbs. We've got carbon emissions falling now at 35% reduction per person since 1990, while the rest of the U.S. is up 7%. So we're going in the right direction. And a 70% recycling rate, which has sort of hit a plateau, and we're going to come back this year with a new Portland Recycles plan for how to get us off of that. You know, 70% is better than 99.9% of the U.S., but we know that we can beat San Francisco is basically where we want to go. So there's more to be done there. So those are our key dashboards. Some of these things, like the recycling rate, we have a very direct impact on. A lot of what we do specifically impacts, obviously, decisions every day by individuals and businesses is actually what makes it happen. It's not the city. And similarly with the other performance measures, we set the stage, but we don't do it. We're not building streets. We're not building homes. We're not investing in businesses, but we're trying to get the rules right so that those things happen.
And I think that's one of the key things about planning's performance measures that are worth pointing out to the budget committee is that, you know, Susan and her bureau have selected things that are not wholly within their control, but again, get at sort of the outcomes that we're looking for from a good planning process. And so, you know, if you look at the percentage of new housing units, you know, that are within the city of Portland out of the metro region, we don't have control over that. But as I think it's stated in some of your materials, that is the intent though of our zoning and our comp plan and everything else is to drive some of that housing here. So and again, I think this is the conversation we had with a lot of bureaus throughout this process was trying to sort of get to, you know, what's the ultimate outcome for the service that you provide, even if it's not strictly within your control. And I think planning did a great job of that.
Can I just follow off of that, because the first benchmark you have here is the percentage of new housing units. That's the first one you see, and it struck me that is anomalous for a couple of reasons. One is for reasons Andrew's just described, which is you only indirectly touch that. So we're judging you based on something where, you know, you're not directly accountable. But second, the Housing Bureau might actually have a different way of looking at this, which is their view of equity may very well be that it's time for the other three counties to step up and build and preserve more affordable housing so people have those choices. We're about 50% of the three-county population, but we're 75% of the beds and units that serve people at the affordable level. And you might argue that one of a more equitable future for the region is for cities and counties to actually invest in housing so that people can age in place if they're older adults, so that working class people can afford to live, and others. So I'm just curious, how do you square that, both in terms of this being not something that you directly influence, and second, is there the risk that this indicator goes against our view of regional equity, which would have the other counties provide more of their fair share of housing, particularly at below 80%?
I think the issue around the low income and affordable housing is especially important, and we should be measuring that, I think, as a regional number. That would be great. And we should be measuring it, and I'm assuming housing is doing that for Portland.
Metro could, but I don't think we have great data on it, and we keep missing out on the HUD grant to do that regional
the bigger picture. In terms of having more of the new housing units in the region, in Portland, it helps us get to a whole lot of other goals. You know, it supports our ability to have great transit. It supports our ability to have, if you have more units of housing just by default, hopefully, you're going to be able to have at least some more units of affordable housing. It helps to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. It basically locates more housing where there already are some great amenities, which is within the city of Portland. That said, this is a trend that your cohorts in the suburban locations would love to turn around. Part of this is happening because we're doing such a great job at creating wonderful, complete, great neighborhoods that people want to move to and live in. And I'd say several of the suburban neighborhoods are taking notice, the suburban jurisdiction are taking notice and starting to say, we need to build some places that are more Portland-like in order to attract and keep people in Beaverton, in Hillsborough, instead of doing the reverse commute.
Right.
So, agree.
Dante probably spent a bit of time talking about the KPMs that we have with respect to how are we really looking at the equity issues that we should be looking at and what we're measuring. But what are some things that either of you think that we ought to be measuring in key performance measurements that we maybe aren't measuring now or haven't started measuring yet? For example, I was just looking ahead in our packet, and one of the BDS KPMs is the number of housing units brought up to code as a result of neighborhood inspection division efforts. Well, you know, that's a livable community and an equity issue. So I'm just wondering, having actually spent some time recently looking at the number of vacant abandoned houses in East Portland, for example, are we looking at the right? Are we missing some measurements that we ought to try to develop for the near term that we aren't using now, even though I think these are illuminating. They're not necessarily complete. What do you think?
I do know that at Planning and Development Directors, we've talked, so we meet every couple of weeks from all the development bureaus, and we've talked a good bit about how do we improve the equity measurement of what we're doing, and so I think actually direction from you all to tell us to come back and tell you that would be really helpful. I do know that I think when I was here last week or the week, 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the infrastructure report, it's still new for some bureaus for figuring out how to do this. Mm-hmm. And Dante and I do spend a good bit of time talking about how do we bring it down to real numbers. So I think we, Tracy Manning from Housing and Dante and I have met to talk about how can we together come up with some better equity measures. So I don't have a good answer right now. Do you have any?
Agreed. I think it was a process of finding the top three or four, and as you said, they're not inclusive by any means or exhaustive anyway. But we are, in fact, just starting to meet to talk about how do we impact gentrification in a way that's not, forced displacement that still provides for the betterment of neighborhoods. And I don't know that we have the answers by any means as of yet. And I think still also that there needs to be more engagement on what are the equity criteria in how we look at some of these things and what weight are we giving that in relation to what we're doing, actually. So I think that's a continuing conversation that we'll have.
So one way we looked at it when we were, so with our budget advisory committee, just real briefly, is that we took all of the projects and programs, in kind of clumps, maybe 40 of them total we put all of our projects into, and asked the question from an equity point of view, which of these are definitely serving people who aren't normally or always served lower income or people of color. And it actually helped us make some decisions. So, for example, the first ad package that I talked about for single-family homes, we also have a project that's already in the main budget to look at the same kind of development standards for multifamily development. And we said, okay, you got to look at both of those things. We have to put the multifamily one in the budget and ask for the single family, because some people propose we flip it around because of the call for looking at infill issues immediately in the single family neighborhoods. And there was sort of the decision, no, one should really be in the core budget right now and not the other. And then just looking at how much work we're doing in East Portland and the shift in the work to East Portland and North Northeast over the past 3 years as part of our budget group.
The other thing, Mayor, in terms of equity, I mean, just to note, because we've been working, you know, with Dante and also Susan on some of the priority area dashboards, and so you don't have them yet, but equity and inclusion is one of the priorities you set. And so we have been developing key performance measures around equity and inclusion that should be ready to share pretty soon. So.
I do. I'm sitting here going, I just have noticed that there's no measures on displacement. And that's been a big discussion in East Portland. And it's a big discussion in a lot of neighborhoods, actually. And so it seems to me that having it on your dashboard would be wonderful, actually, to have a measure of displacement that you are looking at every day. I think that would be a real plus. And I don't know what that would look like. Your performance measures are, you know, interesting. And when I was looking at them, I was thinking, oh, yeah, planning. They don't have control over anything, really. So, but a displacement measure, either for you or somewhere else, I just think it needs to be somewhere so that these folks get a regular look at that number.
Sure.
And know what it means.
And so, we are tracking that, and we do a considerable mapping process now along with housing so that we can kind of help identify the opportunity areas. And we take four measures of income, people of color, education, and renters, and then map that with the actual market data of who's moving, you know, and how fast are prices rising in different areas. And so we have sort of a map of where displacement is happening now and where it's most likely to happen in the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to put that in a measure here, but I think it's really important that council gets to see that. But we could
right.
talk.
Yeah.
I think it should be on the dashboard.
And so Katie, frankly, Shannon actually can talk a little bit about the measures we do have around sort of equity and inclusion and particularly displacement measures.
Yeah, thanks dashboard. For letting me jump in, literally. So one of the measures that we've developed for the equity inclusion priority area is actually connected with the high opportunity neighborhoods. And that's basically looking at the demographics of high opportunity neighborhoods, so percent of people of color living in high opportunity neighborhoods. And that's something that we developed with the Office of Equity, and I think it's an interesting measure. It's something that we can capture based on, you know, what we're doing now, and so that's one that we were going to propose to include to track that equity and opportunity area. In addition to, we developed three other measures, so I can mention those as well, but this is the most pertinent to this conversation. I think that does help capture, you know, what we're talking about in terms of displacement in a way that we're already that we're already collecting and reporting on.
Katie, can I just point out a small irony in this conversation? We're talking about high opportunity areas, investing in infrastructure and housing so people both can choose to live in those neighborhoods and not be displaced. And yet, as a city, we're also looking for ways to try to bring down the cost per unit of housing, which is an important goal as well. Mm-hmm. They sort of, there's a point in which they work at cross purposes. The cheapest dirt and the least expensive housing is in areas of the least opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Are we perpetuating a cycle of investing in areas, or are we helping to raise that area? Are we people who are displaced, are they moving to housing that's better than the existing stock? What's the cause and effect? I mean, it gets kind of complicated. I would argue we need to do both. But if you want to bring down the cost of housing, invest in areas that do not have existing opportunity, because the dirt's cheaper. But it goes against this very these other very compelling values about giving people choice and also mitigating against the potential displacement by having an inventory of housing that people can access in areas of high opportunity.
Right, I so agree with you, Nick. It's not an easy thing at all. there's no magic way to do it. And if Portland can manage to do it, it will be hugely innovative and wonderful, and people will be coming from all over to study how you did it. So that's also why, if it's important to the city, then it should be measured and should be out front where you can see it, because it will be difficult. So I'm agreeing with you. And I don't think that the fact that Portland hasn't been able to do it yet has anything to do with its leadership, really. It's just a difficult thing. So,
and if I may, also, just having had the luxury of sitting on a couple of the NOFA panels for the Housing Bureau, one thing I noticed was that there was no specific strategy or specific location that was a focus of the funding. It went from all across the city, and it also went from, are we going to retrofit this housing unit versus are we going to build new units? And so I don't know. I think it would be helpful if all of PDC, you know, housing, BPS, and council were able to come up with an overall idea and strategy of what is most important right now, in some sense, so that whoever's sitting on the panels can have a better idea of what exactly they should be focusing on and where.
I just had a comment that was kind of related to that, and I think it speaks to all the key performance measures, in that sometimes I think in looking at these, it would be helpful to have a sense of what the ideal would be. So if you take the example of percent of new housing units, I mean, the number for the 15-16 is 40%. What would the ideal number be? And in some of these, I know it's in the text. I mean, it actually says what the goal is and what that's based on. But on others, I found myself very much scratching my head as to where we would ultimately want to get to. And I understand that the percentages that are supplied here are based on, they're budget specific. Like, this is the target based on the budget that we're allocating to. But it would be nice to know sort of where we would ideally want to get to for these performance measures too, because it's useful to measure, I guess, against yourself, but it's also useful to know kind of where you would want to be headed for stuff like this.
Yeah.
Right. No. In every case, it is implied.
Yeah. No. And I think that's exactly right. And I think as we further flesh these out, that's going to become more clear. So you'll see some of these KPMs have been around for a long time, and I think the bureaus have a sense, and you can get that from some of the text. Others, these are relatively new, and so that target setting still needs to happen. Mm-hmm. But you're right; it's both a combination of what's the budget target, but that issue aside, what's the ultimate target? Because, you know, we're going to get to a point, or the idea is to get to a point that, you know, even in a cutback year, you know, you're looking at these KPMs and seeing that if we have to take this 5% cut, you're going to see a decline in this budget target, but we still want to be measuring it against where we ultimately want to end up.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I have a very simple rule of thumb on these things, which is I try to imagine if you went up to some stranger on the street and said, what do you think about this measurement, whether it would mean anything to them. And I think so core to what you do is things like climate and waste and other things. I think those are wonderful things to quantify. The new housing one just doesn't resonate for me, because I think you'd have to spend a lot of time explaining the why. And then what happens if Nike decides that they think it's a shame that people are commuting so far to come out to their campus from Portland, and decide to add 10,000 units of housing adjacent to their campus? You'd be in the toilet for a number, and we'd be having a hearing on why is your number collapsed. And yet I would argue that's probably overall good for the region that people aren't commuting so far to get to Nike. So,
and I'm real happy to toss that one out. That wasn't one of our first ones, but we might have someone else with another opinion. I do want to point out, just on the back of our little strategic plan, very clearly we had the same, obviously a smaller group of issues. We don't have police and fire and everything else, but these are our North Star goals, and that helps to answer the question that I think Rob was posing about, well, where are you trying to get? And everybody in our office kind of knows this is where we're trying to head.
I had one question, which is I think that CBO recommended for both the single family development regulations and completing the central city plan update decision packages that aren't these things that should be paid for out of BDS permit fees, and I was just curious what BDS's reaction to that is.
Yeah, we'll find out next.
I could also, pose a question to Commissioner Fritz. We've had discussions. Other cities do pay for some of this work out of fees, and so it's something we could look into. Paul and I have this discussion. He wins in every arm wrestle I've ever had with him, so far I haven't convinced him except for a few things, and that's not quite true, because if you'll remember, we did look at this issue around recap and came to the conclusion that we could use fees for doing code improvements, which is similar to what the single family work is.
Well, it's $102,000, to be fair, coming from permits. So from BDS's development services perspective, developers pay fees based on the cost of permitting the new development. It doesn't seem fair to ask the developer of a particular project to help fund a broader discussion of code language and livability and various other things, because everybody should help pay for, and we're going to have this discussion when we get to the BDS budget. There should be some general fund resources should at least help pay for services that are provided to everyone rather than permit fees, which we're aiming to try to keep our permit fees steady also, and at the same time building back our reserves. And a lot of the BDS budget and line items is specified by state law as to what those fees can be used for and what they can't be used for.
I also had a compliment, which is accompanied by, I think it was a compliment accompanied by a question. I would have thought that in the past several years, with newspaper readership declining, like physical readership declining, and the newspaper getting smaller, that recycling would have gone down as a percentage of total waste, because newspapers are the easiest things to recycle. So am I correct in saying that you've been fighting against a trend there?
Part of the answer is that 75% of our waste is commercial and only 25% is residential. So not that businesses don't read the Oregonian or other newspapers, but I think it's important to note that most people don't think about that. Thanks.
Any other winding around?
Thank you
very much.
Yep, thank you.
And speaking of BDS, I believe they're next.
Our